What on earth are we going to find to talk about tonight then? Good evening, everybody. Welcome to our latest X Spaces, talking about all things Norwich City. You can decide whether that's fortunately or unfortunately in the current circumstances. I'm Connor Southwell. Paddy Dabbitt is with me. Paddy's going to say hello so we can make sure we can all hear him. This is as close to an audio test as we go.
Paddy. Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, wherever you are in the world, Connor, and friends.
There we go. Brilliant stuff. So, yes, we want you to come on and have your say, really. You've heard enough of us. We've done a 75-minute or so podcast on everything to do with Norwich City. We want to hear your thoughts on where the Canaries find themselves at the moment. Maybe you've got an opinion on Liam Manning, on Ben Napa, on just the state of how things are going. It can be the recruitment. It can even be the Carrow Road development. Perhaps you sit in the River End and would like to come on and have your say about that and that process and how you're feeling about it. Of course, even if you don't sit in the River End and you've got a view, we'd like to hear from you as well. So if you do want to come on, you do want to speak, we're going to be on here for about an hour or so. So you don't have to do that straight away. You can let us all get warmed up beforehand just jump on whenever you so wish. You should hopefully have a button somewhere on your screen to request to speak. And equally, if you just want to sit in the background, you just want to listen, that's okay as well. I can see we've already got 3 requests, which is brilliant. And we will work our way to Chris, to James and to Tom in very short order. But Paddy, it's been a few days and I think it's probably fair to say the feelings and the emotions of Sunday are understandably still very raw to Norwich City supporters. And if we're honest, yes, it is about an East Anglian derby defeat. But I guess as we discussed in depth on the podcast, it's also probably about where they find themselves at the moment on and off the pitch.
Certainly on and off, yeah. Because for me, when you talk about Sunday, Connor, but you know, less than 48 hours before then was that Carrow Road revamp announcement and the reaction that that produced. And so for me, it's off the pitch as well. And this is why it's great. We've already got, you know, some listeners who want to come on and give us their views, because it feels to me almost those two events put together over that 48 hours or so, it's almost released that frustration, which is, for me, has always been under that surface the last 2 or 3 seasons. And it's ruptured maybe, you know, when I was trying to think before we came on, we all remember the Dean Smith home game, was it Blackburn, you know, about a month before he got bulleted, and just the ferocity of the reaction. That was almost enough's enough. And en masse, Carrow Road that day signalled their, you know, displeasure about Dean Smith and his brand of football. And that was beginning of the end. There was a David Wagner game at home to Watford. I think it was in the January or February of that season. I think he made a substitution, didn't he, in the second half of the game. He actually went on to win. And again, the reaction inside Carrow Road wasn't great. We've had elements of that. I'm thinking of the 3 goals in 30 minutes at home to Wrexham, and full-time whistle that day. We saw it again, West Brom last midweek. And that's there, but it hasn't, for me, felt like it's ignited. But my sense, mainly around these 2 episodes beforehand and after, we've had some unbelievably excellent writing in the fan media space. There was another great column on My Football Writer earlier today from fans who, enough's enough, and the scale of the feeling of disconnect, that word that keeps getting used, it's there now. It's front and centre, and maybe the Ipswich defeat, because of who it was against and the historical 16 years that were attached to it, that just brings things into this sharp focus that, no, enough's enough, off the pitch, on the pitch. I don't recognise my club almost to that extent. And you hope that, you know, the people who matter in all of this are listening, have heard loud and clear that the levels of almost, you know, enough, as I keep repeating myself, you know, that they're fed up, that they want something to change. It isn't necessarily, for me, it's about Liam Manning's future. It isn't necessarily about Ben Napper's future. They are elements in this psychodrama that, if you're a Norwich fan, you're having to live through now. It's almost more the bigger existential kind of where is this club going? What do they stand for? What's the identity? You know, where is the accountability? All of those factors, which for me are bigger than losing to your bitter rivals, because we know that'll come back round again next year in terms of another chance to set the record straight. It's, for me, what is the direction of travel of this football club? And that's why it's great. We'll hear now. I'll shut up now. We'll hear from the people who matter on this, which is the fans, and what they think about the current state of affairs at Carrow.
Yeah, and I think all this Ipswich fixture has probably done is just brought everything to a head, isn't it? It kind of felt like we were always going to end up here. I mean, I remember, and apologies if the person that said this to me is on here somewhere, which is very possible, because I can't remember who said it to me or in what format, otherwise I would credit them for doing so. But they said to me, it's a little bit, Norwich City in the Championship at the moment is a bit like Manchester United and the whole psychodrama around there. And I think there's probably a lot to be said for that. I'm delighted to say we've got three speakers in the room, so we're going to have a conversation with you guys. I can see we've got George, who's requested as well. Tom, let's start with you, because I think you tried to get on last week, didn't you? And there were a couple of, or maybe the week before, and there were a couple of technical difficulties. So I'm delighted we've got you. Let's kind of open up where Paddy left it, really, which is, how are you feeling about this all at the moment? And I promise that's not intended to be a leading question. I'm genuinely interested.
Yeah, no, thanks, guys, and thanks for getting me on here. I'm not actually really placing all the blame in Liam Manning's corner, really. I think we've got a really good manager there. You know, he was in work at Bristol City, and had we not taken him and someone else, you know, we'd still, you know, he'd still be in work. So I think he's a good all-round manager there, really. But I think it's the executive committee above that, you know, Ben Napper, your Neil Adams, and the squad that's been assembled, really. And I think we just got a mismatch of players there, a lot under the Thorup style. And then also, you know, some of his players, Harry Darling, for example. I just think there's a real problem there with the mix of players and gel into what he wants to play, really. I don't know what you both think.
Yeah, I think this is the bit really that has kind of left me scratching my head, because, and again, I was speaking to somebody who I won't name because it's not fair, but they are looking very much outside in, and you know, it's good sometimes to get the perspective of people who are doing that, because I think it can maybe make you, sometimes you're a bit close to it, you can't quite maybe see the problem. And they said to me, it's got a lot of feeling of a football club that has said the right things, but maybe not necessarily either done the right things or done them well enough. And I think that kind of is made, and I'll bring Chris on your point there, Tom, because it feels to me there is not a split, but I think there is probably maybe people who split this slightly differently in terms of the way that they see it. Clearly, like you say, there's the Liam Manning element who, as you say, and I would agree, I think there's enough evidence there that he is a good coach. You don't go from being a good coach 4 months ago and then 9 games into a season, suddenly you're not anymore. So that's where I'll bring Chris in, because surely, Chris, on that basis, it has to be something about the environment that he's in, whether that's recruitment or the squad that he's got or all of those things. I mean, what's your view on where Norwich City find themselves?
Hello, Connor. Hello, Paddy. People say about, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you loud and clear, mate. Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. People say about, Liam Manning has given what the hand he'd been dealt with, but surely he had a say in these signings that come in the summer.
It's an interesting.
Do you know what I'm saying? Yes, man. Ben Knapp has got to take responsibility because of a, but I'm not, and I'm by no means, Ben Knapp has got to take a lot of responsibility, but surely Liam Manning had a say on, yes, I want this player. No, I don't want that player. I don't think it'd be right for us for the style of play we're playing.
And this is the point, Pad, isn't it? And Chris has made a good one about kind of the sporting director model. And probably the, if you want to broaden it out further, maybe even the structure that Norwich has got generally. I mean, you use the word accountability, and it is, it can be hard, can't it, for fans to understand exactly who takes what element and who is responsible for what element. And, you know, as Chris said there, is Liam Manning involved in the process of signing players? Is he just informed right towards the end? You can understand why fans are frustrated by that.
Well, because, and this ties in with Tom's point, and I would incline to agree, you look at it and you've gone from Thorup, very different in terms of his outlook and his approach, and so far on this, admittedly, small sample under Liam Manning as Norwich coach, but in terms of style of play. So as a recruitment team, as Lee Dunn and his staff, and then Ben Napper above them and Neil Adams, very difficult to sort of navigate your way through over these last 3 or 4 windows, when it feels to me, I mean, you're handbraking from one head coach to another. And of course, that then calls into, for me, the questions which continue to won't go away, because Liam hasn't really had a front-footed start. And that's why did Ben make that call? You know, you only rip up the Torup experiment if what comes after it, it starts to pretty in swift order, because that's the way they wrapped around the mitigation with Torup, that, you know, no, top six is the expectation. If Norwich, to paraphrase Ben Napper, are in this league, irrespective of who the head coach is, the playing staff, the people above them, they should be targeting the top six season in, season out. So, and that's not of Liam Manning's making, that expectation, but that is where this season has been pitched. Now he's falling a long way short of that. And as a result, at the moment, and I tend to agree, I think he is a good coach. You look at his record and how he has improved every club he's been at. But it feels that call, that roll of the dice from Torup to Manning right now is clearly not worked. You know, 8 points from 9 games. There's no discernible style of play. You've got, again, not of his making, but these ongoing, which spans both head coach eras, fitness, recovery, rehabbing of players, you know, the amount of muscular injuries at this stage of the season, it's not acceptable. And if you're Manning, no wonder for me, he's broken ranks a bit there off the back of the Slimani news and said, look, some tough words have been had because I, as a head coach, want the best players available. Now, it's not really, you can't hold him to account for the fact he's not got Chris Garden, he's not got Jallo. And obviously then, you know, when he came in the building, the likes of Mahovo and that weren't ready and available for him to use either. So I don't think this is all necessarily Liam Manning's door, but, you know, that point that Chris is putting forward. Yes, he clearly must have had a say in the signings. I don't think Ben Napper would operate in a closed shop mentality. And we know that Torup had his say, and then it was obvious. You look at Oscar Schwartau, you look at Anis Ben Slimani, you look at, one or two other players who came in, Emi Marcondes. They were very clearly Torup-led signings. I don't think Ben Napper came to Torup one day and said, I'm going to get you these three Danish players or Danish extracted players, and you just crack on with it. So there was a collaborative approach there. I think it's reasonable to expect the same applied going into this summer. So, but what I also would say as a sort of a counter to that is, you know, players like Kovacevic, players like Medic, players like Cernac previously and Jurasek, they were long time targets, and we know how it works. The recruitment staff almost work independently of whoever the head coach is at any given time. So they were club tracked targets, which then comes back round. You would think at the point where they can push the button on those, Liam Manning must have concurred, as to bring it full circle and pertinent to the game we've just finished on Sunday, the exit for Nunes. I don't think, unless I'm wrong, I don't think if Liam Manning has gone to Napa and said, no, I see Marcelino Nunes as a key figure in that midfield. He is an indispensable player, even with the contractual situation. I don't think he gets sold. So for me, he's also been, you know, willing to sanction that move over and above the financial element of 7.5 million up front for a player with 12 months left. So I think it's safe to say that Liam Manning would have had quite a big say in all the business, inward and outward, that's happened this summer. So in that regard, it's very, very much, you know, if we're looking purely at recruitment and what has worked and what hasn't worked, I think you have to, you know, include him and his coaching staff, as well as Ben Napper and Lee Dunn and all those constituent elements in this decision-making process. Because otherwise, you know, surely if you're a head coach and you're being imposed players, then I don't think that's an environment Liam Manning would have left Bristol for, frankly.
No, and in fact, I remember, I think it was at the fans forum that Radio Norfolk hosted. I think it was Ben Napper actually who told an anecdote around Matthias Kristgoren in terms of, I presented this player to Liam and he said to me, if you're any good, you will bring him here. So that shows that there is some relationship there. I mean, just to come back to Tom, I mean, you spoke about probably this Liam Manning factor of going from, you know, the perception of looking at a coach as being a good coach somewhere else. And then almost they come to Norwich and kind of just can't get it going. We've seen that now. And people maybe won't want to start here, but Dean Smith, as an example, did some good work prior to coming to Norwich, irrespective maybe of the job he did here or the work he's subsequently gone on to. David Wagner had success at Huddersfield. I take the point, maybe he didn't at Schalke, but I don't think anyone did it at Schalke in the space of about 4 years. They had about 20 odd head coaches, didn't they? Yanis off Torup clearly as well was a success at Nordjylland in terms of the style of play and youth development, albeit in a system and an ownership group that almost forces their coaches to behave in that way and to bring players through in that sense. Liam Manning, the latest. I mean, all of these coaches have had success prior to coming to Norwich. surely when they come to Norwich, there's an issue. That feels maybe this is the point I think you were making, that it's something beyond the head coaches and bigger than whoever is in the dugout.
Yeah, I mean, it just you've made some brilliant points there. It just completely alludes to what you've just said. It's, you know, it can't be that we can go through all those managers and we're churning them out. I don't know, you know, how many we've had recently, like you've said there. You know, he was, you know, Ben Napper liked Thorpe. He nailed his colours to the mast, so to speak, and I know some performances there were pretty dire towards the end. You know, Portsmouth and Millwall away especially, and it felt like, even to me, I thought, well, has he lost the dressing room here? Because performance has really tanked. But it makes you wonder, had we have maybe stuck with him a bit longer, like when, you know, when we had Stuart Webber here and Daniel Farker, when, you know, that result at Ipswich aside, had we not got that, you know, he could possibly have gone then. But it almost feels like, had we left him and let him have another summer window to bring some more players in who he wanted, you know, maybe if we'd have got to this time now with Johannes in charge, you know, we could be in a better place. Who knows? But hindsight's a great thing. But it just feels like, especially with the Nunes thing for me, you know, we got rid of him, really one of our last creators, so to speak. And then to get Pelham Mattson in, who also I think does look a very good player, mind you, but to be told we were going to get him or Topic, and it just feels like we have no creation now at all. So it's all a bit baffling, really. And yeah, I just think it goes above that, really. I think we've got bigger issues at the club.
And that clearly lends itself to where you're at, Chris, in terms of, you know, you've spoken a bit about the recruitment, and clearly the lack of creativity has been raised. I mean, you could even boil it down to, you know, Yakov Medic, for example, the fact that Norwich are wanting to play with a high line and they've signed a player who maybe doesn't have those capabilities. Even down to that example, we could list several others. Is it fair to say you're sort of leaning more towards the recruitment? That's the sense I've got. So correct me if I'm wrong in that.
Yeah, I am actually, but, I don't actually know what Jacob Wright's done wrong. I mean, he had one bad game against Middlesbrough and you haven't seen him since. And he looks like someone who could... He's not generally creative, but he looked like someone who could create chances. And we're struggling to create chances for the striker, Sargent, aren't we? And it doesn't seem anyone in that team that started Sunday is going to be able to create the chances that we need to win games, I think. I said to, I think it was Sam on a podcast, one of these about a couple of weeks ago, I said, creativity is going to be our downfall. I think Paddy was well. And since I've said that, it has been the problem, is the creating chances to score goals at the moment. And Jacob Wright had one bad game and you haven't seen him since.
Yeah, I am. Sorry, Paddy, do you want to jump in there on Jacob?
No. You're probably going to say what I said. Yeah, I mean, I asked Torup. I asked Manning pre-Wrexham, Jacob Wright, is it his time now? Is it his time? Yeah. And, yeah. You know, he talked up about, you know, that they had a lot of competition in there, I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, that didn't get the sense that it was, and subsequently that's been proven to be the case. I don't think we've seen him at all, not for one minute. And I'm in complete agreement with Chris. Baffling for me in a team that are struggling so much to progress the ball through the middle of the park. And of course the byproduct of that is, look at Josh Sargent now. He is a shadow of that player who was banging goals in.
Definitely.
At the start of the season. I think you said to me yesterday, Connor, because we did it off the back of that podcast that was a very big data deep dive a few weeks back. Sunday, I think he had two touches in his own defensive penalty area, and he only had three in the Ipswich area in the whole of the 90 minutes.
Yeah, you say that. It was 28 in total, and you know, which feels like nothing really. That was his second highest of the season. Yeah. He got 33 against Wrexham. So,
but only three in the actual penalty area,
correct,
where he
should
be doing his business. So, how on earth can you structurally be setting up correctly if you've got one of, if not the best number nine of his type in this league, and he's having so little exposure to the penalty area in terms of chance creation? For me, the only other point I would say on this is Ben Lee, who does our tactics reports, he's done the Ipswich one today. And it isn't to pick on Kenny McLean per se, because obviously him and Topic and Mattson, who I agree, I thought Mattson, albeit, you know, he didn't cover himself in glory for the Philogene goal, but I thought up to that point, he did look of those midfielders, he looked the pick. But Ben Lee's done his tactical analysis today, and again, this almost unwillingness on the half turn to take the ball and look for progressive passes. And he highlighted a few clips where McLean had maybe, instead of looking forward, he's gone back towards Kellen Fisher, and then it goes back to Harry Darling and then maybe Kovacevic. And you contrast that with Jacob Wright, who is that type of midfielder. He is, because obviously he's been schooled in the Man City Academy. It's almost second nature that he will take the ball in tight spaces. His technique, he trusts it, his touch, he's on the half turn, he can see pictures and he can bring others into play. It's absolutely crying out for a Jacob Wright in that Norwich midfield. He's not by any manner of means the silver bullet, who would transform everything. But for me, given the amount of time he's been out the side and it hasn't looked any better in the middle of the park, he has to come back in. Because you go back to, for me, the one most cohesive move they put together in however many games was the goal they scored at Stoke. And what did that, what did that look like? It was McLean to a forward pass to Mattson, who then forward pass into Sargent, went for the return, and Jack Stacey's on the overlap. Progressive central midfield play. Unfortunately, that's the exception rather than the rule at the minute with the players he's got in that midfield.
It is. I don't want to bore everyone with numbers, but just sort of looking at the numbers again on Sunday, attacking third touches. So you've got Sargent, who, you know, we talk about his penalty box touches, had 7 in Ipswich's final third. For context, the most was Jack Stacey with 17. Oscar Strato had 13. Kellen Fisher had 12. So those are the top three for touches, and two of those are your fullbacks. So that maybe points to where we are at. Let's bring James and George in, because they've been waiting. Chris and Tom, thank you. I will come back to you guys very shortly. George, let's start with you. I mean, you can feel free to pick this discussion up where we are at the moment. Is there sort of anything else you'd like to add to which maybe where we're at in terms of creativity and probably the footballing issues of this side, so to speak?
Yeah, I mean, picking up with Jacob Wright. I mean, again, I don't know why he's not starting. I mean, he looks probably one of the best created midfielders we've probably got at the moment. I mean, on Sunday, being at the game, we played Topic further at the pitch, it looked like. I mean, I'm pretty sure he's more of a defensive midfielder, ain't he? More than a attacking.
Yeah. Well, that was certainly as billed. And to be fair, I think they had some success in terms of the pressing within there, in terms of stopping Ipswich from playing out. But yeah, I think, again, maybe where we're at 9 games in, it kind of felt like a short-term solution, didn't it, for a certain game, rather than, I think, something you'd want to see every week.
Yeah, exactly. And bringing in, obviously, Kellen Fisher, I think, you know, he's an amazing fullback, but I don't think him at left-back at the moment is suiting him as well, because obviously he has to be right-footed, so he has to, like, cut in again for his right foot. I think bringing Mahovo on and having him back will be a big key for us as well, hopefully.
Yeah, I'd sorry to jump in there, Connor. I completely agree. I think it's crying out for a Mahovo, just because he's a natural left-sided, attack-minded fullback. You know, Kellen Fisher's doing a job there, but that's not his natural position.
No.
You feel a little bit sorry for him as well. You know, again, he got exposed in the West Brom game, didn't he, at Carrow Road? And,
yeah,
and there was a few times there on Sunday as well. And, you know, I mean, you've got a piece, haven't you, Connor, with Lucien, and talking about what a long road back it has been, sort of in the morning. But the good thing for me now is Manning is just giving them a couple of little 15-minute cameos against West Brom and Ipswich. He's got 2 weeks now to really kick him on again. And for me, Bristol City team news drops that day. He has to be in the 11.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, Mahovo has to either start or play at least 45 minutes on against Bristol City. And I think Jurasek should be starting as well, because against West Brom, when Jurasek and Mahovo came on, it looked like them two had a really good partnership on that left-hand side. And you got Cernak at the moment, who's a bit off form. I mean, in the Ipswich game, he had probably 2 good chances and both of them he put off target. So that's not really good enough at the moment, to be fair.
Yeah, agreed on Jurasek. I definitely want to see a bit more of him, which, again, I recognise probably feels long overdue. James, just to bring you in, because I know you've been waiting very patiently in the background. We will come to Alex and to Rob as well shortly. But in terms of where you're at with this team, because as much as we kind of, as I said, you can split it in big picture, and I think we will do that in a little while, it is clear for the reasons we've discussed and Paddy's touched upon and we've mentioned in podcasts, there are footballing issues as well with this team, isn't it? It's not like, you know, they're losing games because everything's kind of a mess. There are some coaching points as well, which I guess it probably lends into why maybe Liam Manning is attracting some of the heat.
Yeah, I think the way we've set up in most games this season has been all wrong, really. Like, I was particularly annoyed after the loss. Obviously it all boiled over on Sunday, but even the two away games before that, we were just so negative, defensive. And, obviously we were told Liam Manning's a pragmatist, but I really don't believe that this is like true pragmatism, i.e. like the best possible use of the squad. I also think it's setting up in such a negative manner so often doesn't really help the confidence of the squad, in that if you're telling a team, oh, we should go to Stoke and play for a point, like you're basically telling your own team that I don't believe you're good enough to go and take the game to like what is really an average championship team. So yeah, I didn't really agree with the approach there. And I think you can see it in the way we played on Sunday as well, with the players not willing to take the ball on the half turn and play forward. And I just think the confidence has been completely drained from the squad, and there's very few players sort of playing anywhere near like how well I think they could play.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I absolutely agree. And this is where I think generally when I know people maybe have been slightly frustrated when Liam speaks about mentality and the basics, and he does speak about those things a lot. But there is some truth in that, isn't there? From kind of, and Paddy mentioned it in terms of what Ben Lee outlined earlier in his piece. Again, if you want a dissection of maybe what isn't happening from a football perspective, that's always a good place to start. But it is clear there are moments where there are opportunities to play forward, and there are opportunities to maybe benefit from some of the situations that they're creating. And for whatever reasons, like you say, be it confidence, be it anything else, the players just aren't taking that. So again, is that something that maybe we need to cut Liam Manning a bit of flack for, or is that something that he should be reiterating to the players? Because it certainly seems, if you take his interviews, like he is trying to do that.
Well, he's said he's trying to do that, but like we haven't seen any evidence of us trying to play more into midfield and not necessarily like take stupid risks, but like you're not gonna achieve anything just passing the ball around in like a giant U shape. Like you have to be willing to take more risks and play into midfield and play on the turn and like get in between the opposition rather than just play around them, you know? And yeah, I mean, you look at the goal at Stoke away. It was like a rare moment where we actually played I think it was McLean played a line splitting pass into midfield, and Mattson takes it on the turn and plays a 1-2 before spreading it wide to Stacey there. And you just see how much space it creates when you actually play into midfield and suck the opposition in. And then that creates more the space for Stacey out wide to run in behind there. And you just see how much more effective that is compared to what we've seen for most of the season, where we're just sort of going side to side into the fullbacks in deep areas or whatever. And it's just coming straight back to the centre backs. And you can see from like the amount of touches our back four or five or whatever you want to call it have compared to the rest of the team, that ball progression really is the biggest issue.
Yeah, and that's where I guess the calls for Jacob Wright are going to be key, because there's a midfielder that clearly is, and I think they are all identikit kind of players to an extent, probably I'd almost describe them as different shades of the same colour, but that's definitely an element that he brings, isn't it, in terms of that creativity. But, and this is part of the wider sort of squad issue, and maybe I'll bring George back in on this because he mentioned Jurasek, but in wide areas now Diallo is out, George. It feels again like, you know, it's kind of square pegs in round holes, particularly in those probably attacking lines, probably either side and behind Josh Sargent at the moment.
Yeah, 100%. I think that's where we're lacking, really. I mean, even since we've sold signs, I mean, you can just see how key he was to us now. With Diallo coming in, I mean, he had a really good run at West Brom in the cup, Watford in the cup. And, you know, him out now, it should just be a chance for Jurasek to come into the team and prove what he's worth, because he's meant to have a big name to him. And obviously under Hoff, he wasn't really playing. There's this doubt of he's not match ready yet. And now he's match ready. Why are we not playing him?
Yeah, I think it's a fair point, particularly when Siernatz has been in the form that he's in and struggling for a little bit of form. I'll be honest, I quite like Antti Siernatz as a footballer. I quite liked what he did last year. We haven't seen enough of that so far this season for sure. It's a shame because actually, and Paddy will concur with this. I mean, we watched most of the pre-season. I thought him and Forsen and they kind of played in those dual 10 roles, didn't they, Paddy? And both of them had pretty decent pre-season. So I think we've probably been scratching our head a little bit as to why Antti Siernatz hasn't been able to take on not just what he did last season, but also what he did in pre-season. I mean, you met that last game at Carrow Road where I think he scored and set one up, didn't he? It looked quite bright that day. We just haven't seen any of that in the Championship so far this season.
No, I actually missed that one. Was that the Breeder game, was it, Connor? Yeah.
Oh, yes, of course you did. Yeah.
So I haven't seen Antti Siernatz in any way, shape or form the player we saw at his good moments last season. I've said it in a few places. I might be wrong, but, and it's only, you know, by sight, but he looks like he's gone away and bulked himself up. He looks very, very, his frame. I mean, he's a big, powerful lad anyway, but it looks to me like he's, you know, he's put on some mass there. And I think it's to the detriment because you can see when he gets the ball in tight spaces,
he was a glider, wasn't he? He used to glide sort of past.
Yeah,
players,
but he sort of lost
that.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. Has he got, I mean, we probably need to, next time we get a chance to have a sit down with him, maybe ask him that. Did he go away and what did he do in terms of, you know, his own personal training over the summer? Because it's definitely, for me, he feels very robotic when he's getting the ball now in those tight spaces. He's not able to turn out. He's not able to sort of, as you say, glide past defenders and that explosiveness he had as well. I don't necessarily say we've seen too much of that this season. So there's that element for me in play when we discuss him, but also as well, I just think the way he's been sort of started in the middle and like you say, those sort of number 10 roles, then he was shunted back out right, wide right again and went post Chris Garden, and he's been back in to the centre again. And, none of it seems necessary to me to be with a plan. It's almost just, you know, moving him around in the hope that something catches and, you know, he rediscovers whatever it was that he had in the best moments of last season. And it is a massive concern. And that's even before you go down the route again of, you know, how much they spent on him and the expectation that a player bought for that amount of money would be able to deliver by year two in England. It's a real, real concern. And I guess it just loops back again to the recruitment, doesn't it? You know, these things are always very difficult to measure because it's how many windows beyond when the player arrives do you definitively say, right, that's a bad signing, that's a good signing. But in the here and now, it would be hard with what we're seeing week in, week out this season anyway, to say that looks a good piece of business.
Yeah, there's a clunkiness to him, isn't there, that I don't think was there last season, which is a real shame because I felt like the almost rhythmic nature to his running, the way he struck a ball, showed real promise actually. And again, whether it's something that he's done, whether it's a plan that they've put him on, and it's kind of classic, well, there's a young lad who's from abroad, we need to sort of bulk him up a little bit, which you can understand, but sometimes that's to the detriment of actually the agility and fluidity of someone's movement. The Wrexham game was the one for me. I completely forgot he was on the pitch until I think he literally got in the way of an attack. And it's just such a shame what has happened this season. And hopefully he can rediscover some of that as well. Let's bring in Alex and Rob because they've been waiting in the background for a fair while. So, gents, thank you very much for joining me. I guess we could probably, unless I'll give you the opportunity to obviously continue with the discussion that we've been having, but to kind of take you down a big picture route at the moment, how, and we'll start with Alex because he's unmuted his mic first. Sorry, Rob. Alex, I mean, in terms of Ben Napper and kind of looking upwards and maybe across in terms of the club as well, what's your views on how that is all operating at this moment in time? And I guess when we talk about that, we talk ultimately about recruitment, don't we?
Well, to be fair, Connor, I couldn't have asked for a better segue because what I have to say isn't really to do with the on the pitch stuff. It's my concern and almost a big red flag that I've sort of seen with Manning in his time here outside of the on the pitch stuff. It's the communication around him and it's the almost when Manning was, it became clear that Manning was the head running choice. I think the most significant thing to me, and this might just be me personally, but I think it might resonate with other Norwich fans, is he's a Norwich boy. He's from the area. He grew up going to the club. And that's huge. It's second one in our entire history. And he should have been someone at the very least who can come in and understand the club. You know, it's like, I don't doubt when Ben Napper said, in the preseason when I think it was you and Paddy were doing that, open interview with him, Liam Manning and Zoe Webber. When Mark Attanasio said about, Napa said that Manning was his first, second and third choice. I don't doubt whatsoever the fact that he was from the area, did have a role, and he would be able to understand the club. And you look at that and you think, great, wow, right. We've got someone who is actually one of our own. Even forget everything else. That's what you want. You want someone who understands the club. And then one of the biggest red flags for me that came from that interview was Manning almost refusing to say how he was a fan of the club. Even if he wasn't, even if he didn't actually grow up supporting the club, why in the hell would you not get a free bit of goodwill from the fan base and say, yeah, no, massive Norwich fan growing up? It's just these minimal things. Like, again, like I said, with Ben Napper saying that he was first, second and third choice. Why the hell do you say that? You know, why would you try and communicate that you are so confident that this is the right option and almost not even not giving yourself an out? But it just seems so, such an arrogant thing to say, like you're so self-assured on he will work. He wouldn't say that he was a fan of the club. And that would have bought so much goodwill. Imagine it. Imagine right now if he had come out and he was so bold and so proud about his love of the football club. I don't think the reaction to everything that's gone on beyond, you know, the stuff on the pitch, it'd still be a negative atmosphere. But people they'd want it for him a bit more. You know, it's that fundamental thing of seeing one of your own out there on the touchline. It's even like coming out post Ipswich, and it was almost, it didn't feel like he got it. How the hell can a man from Norwich who went to the club when he was younger not get it? It was very much, yeah, well, we've just got to get up and get on. No. He should understand the gravity of it. And I just feel like the gravity of having what could have been one of our own, you know, backing your own type of thing. It was just such a lost opportunity by the club. And I think it just carries over more widely on just the way that the club has put itself out towards the fans recently. They've not been putting themselves in the best possible light for us to be behind them. And, you know, at the end of the day, the stuff on the pitch matters far more, but it's these small little things that they could have been doing, that they had been doing, especially under the Farke years, especially even before that, you know. The fan base was always behind the club and it always felt like the club was there for the fans. And they've just missed so many good opportunities, it feels lately, to just get that goodwill back. It feels like a loss of head on how they're communicating and how they're putting themselves forward. Because at the end of the day, you can be struggling on the pitch all you want, but if you don't feel like the club's got your best interest at heart and there's nothing for you to really get behind, you're going to find it so much harder to get behind it.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of good points on there. I mean, and maybe I'll bring Paddy on this, because I don't think we're breaking confidences here, Paddy, because I think, you know, some of what Alex has said there is really interesting. I think it's particularly the stuff on Liam Manning is place, you know, stuff that I've seen in other places. We obviously have the, you know, we're very lucky in that, you know, we get to speak to head coaches. And almost the Liam Manning that you see off camera is to me at least, if he feels quite different to probably the Liam Manning that we see on camera. And you know, again, we've had kind of sit downs with him, and I think I've walked away from all of those thinking this is a guy that genuinely cares. So again, is that like a persona thing, Pad? What do you think maybe that is? And look, clearly maybe wins is the answer. I don't know. But
yeah,
what is it about him that, given what Alex said there, some of those Norfolk roots, the heritage that he has, he's a Man United fan, by the way, but that's neither here nor there. What is it that's kind of struggling to connect, do you think?
Well, I mean, on that point about, you know, we do get to see off camera, as it were. We were told, weren't we, by maybe people in the sort of Bristol City media end of the equation before he moved in the summer, that he is far more relaxed and far more himself. His personality comes through more when the cameras are off. So that might be just the modern coaching thing. I'm sure he's been on these coaching courses and, you know, it's not just about on the pitch and being able to deliver a session and being able to get a team on the pitch to win games. It's also how the other aspects of the managerial craft, probably one of those being how you deal with the media, how you, you know, you don't give any cheap headlines or sound bites away. And, you know, maybe that is what runs through him when you see him, when the cameras go rolling, as opposed to when they come off. But so that's that point. But on the point Alex is making, I think I'm pretty sure in saying that going into that sort of unveiling press conference, I mean, the messaging we were getting from those inside the club, that he almost wanted to go the other way, and rather than embrace the I'm green and yellow to my core and my family are green and yellow, he didn't want that pressure, that added expectation, and wanted to distance himself from it and just treat it almost as another opportunity. Now, that might be right or wrong, but that's just to play devil's advocate. You know, that was very much the messaging, that he didn't want to pile on the hometown boy factor.
I think it was also, he wanted to talk up the opportunity, wasn't it? And the point was kind of, well, if this was the same club and the same opportunity and the same circumstances, but it was in Carlisle, I'd have gone. It wasn't, I think it was more probably the local angle, wasn't it? That he was, like you say, that he was maybe keen to downplay a little bit.
I don't think there's any debate, Alex, is that he does get it. And you know, he has got those roots, you know, born in Norwich, brought up in Bungay. There are Norwich supporting fans in his family. I think, I don't know this 100%, I think his wife is Norwich born, is she? Born and bred, I think. So you'd imagine her family are also, you know, there's a fair proportion of Norwich fans. I don't think there's anybody needs to educate Liam Manning about what this club is, what its standing is in the community, what it represents for Norfolk as a region, you know, the pride that people have in the football club. He gets all that. And when we had that opportunity, you touched on it there, Connor, you know, to sit down with him in the summer when we was out on tour. And I said to him, what I've said to a lot of managers that, you know, that I've sort of been here for, is that if you get this football club rolling, it is powerful. You know, and by that, I mean total buy-in from the fan base, everybody on the same page, irresistible force. That's what this club is, because it means so much to such a wide constituency. And it is unique. You don't get this in other parts of the country because of that geographical isolation to a degree. That tribal sort of, you know, this is more than a football club. It represents us as people and the area and the part of England that we're from. And we've seen it, you know, how powerful was that energy and that, you know, dynamism under Lambert, under Farker, when Alex Neil got it going. If Liam Manning can get this going, then there is no doubt that, you know, it could end back in the Premier League, which is where, you know, they've said this needs to go, from Mark Attanasio and his team downwards and his family to any fan who, I'm sure, despite two bruising attempts under Farker, would love another crack at the Premier League to try and, you know, show a different face in terms of Norwich. So I think he gets all that. I think he understands that if he can get this club going, the potential that there is to really, really accelerate up back up the league into the big league. And then the challenge is to try and stay there once you get there. But, you know, these are all elements that come fundamentally off what we see on the pitch and the product on the pitch and in the here and now. And you do have to take a step back, as bad as it has felt at this moment in time. It's nine games out of a 46 game season. Let's see. Chris Garden hopefully isn't back in short order. You've got Mahovo to drop into the mix. You would like to think that. And I think we've started to see him shift a little bit in terms of bringing Cordoba in, playing a higher line, squeezing the play. They look better structurally in the last two games. Results have still been nowhere near good enough. But it feels to me that maybe there's an acceptance from him and his coaching staff that it isn't just simply about behaviours and accentuating mentality and, you know, empowering players. He talks a lot about that, to make decisions rather than telling them what to do. And I hope part of that evolutionary process is, to go back to what we discussed earlier, is Jacob Wright coming back in, is some more creativity, however he does that, but to try and get that into the midfield areas. And then if you've got, as I say, Chris Garden back in alongside Sargent, Mahovo and one or two others continue to crack on, like Schwartau is showing at the moment, then, you know, it might be a very different feel around the footballing aspect of this football club, you know, come the new year. But, you know, at the moment, I'm saying that, and let's be honest, there's very little circumstantial evidence to say it's anything more than a bit of a, we'll hope that is the case, rather than, no, I can see it's not right, it's not perfect, but I can see what he's trying to do. I don't think at this stage, even his most ardent supporter could say that you can actually see what Liam Manning is trying to do with this Norwich group.
Absolutely. Alex, thank you. We'll come back to you in just a second. Let's bring Rob in, because I think he was itching to get in beforehand. Rob, what would you like to add to this, my friend?
Hi guys, thanks for having me on. Yeah, just to add to a bit to some of the topics you've already talked about, really. But I think one thing that this all comes back to for me, it's got to be the recruitment. If you look at some of these players that we have signed, I know that some of them are young and some of them are coming from abroad and they need time and this and that and the other. But I think, frankly, some of them just don't look up to the task. And again, when we come back to the data-driven recruitment, I was so pleased, I think it was you, Connor, said at the weekend on the pod about how on earth were we trying to recruit Topic and Mattsson to play in the same position. You don't need a spreadsheet or any data to tell you that these guys are completely different. One's a 6'4" monster and one's a 5'7" ball player. Yet we seem to be recruiting them to play in the same place. It doesn't make any sense. And I think Liam Manning, yes, we haven't seen a lot from him so far, but he's had 9 games. But let's just say that again, 9 games. What are you going to do in 9 games? Yes, we need to see a bit more excitement. Yes, we need to see a bit more intent, and we need a set style of play. But we're not Watford. You know, we don't need to be changing manager every 5 minutes. But I've got serious reservations about a lot of these players that we brought in.
My issue, Rob, and again, I said this on the pod as well, you've got a lot of players in that group who are either in their first or second year of Championship football. And you can usually, you know, in a squad, you can afford to carry some, and you can have some with high ceilings that maybe need a little bit of time to adapt. But actually, when you've got, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 of them, as Norwich City do, I mean, we spoke about Antti Sinats, you could, Jose Cordoba, Yakov Medic is in his first year in the division, Pelle Mattsson, Mirko Topic, we could go on and on and on, Vlad, all of them. When you've got that many, that, you know, you need all of them, not just to work, but you need all of them to integrate quickly, to perform quickly, and then to become a team quickly. That's a big ask, isn't it? For, you know, irrespective of how good a coach might be, that's a big ask for us, all of those players as a collective to step up and tick all of those boxes so quickly.
Absolutely. 9 games is such a small portion to be able to mould them and get them playing in the style that he wants. It's not long enough. And I think Medic is actually a really good example of when we talk about the data-led recruitment. You know, you do wonder how they've kind of come across his name, because we needed a defensive overhaul. That was quite clear. He made 3 appearances for Ajax and they jettisoned him, goes to Bochum, they get relegated. And you think, well, we then pay, what, $1.5 million for him, which isn't a lot in this day and age, but still. But you kind of think, you know, how is he going to improve our defence? Again, there's just something there. And I don't wish to pile on the guy, but you just look at it and you think, you know, is he an upgrade on Shane Duffy? Not so sure that he is. And I think you can say that about a lot of them. I am wondering by the day how Ben Napper survived this much longer, because ultimately this does come back to him. I don't think there's any question about that.
Yeah, again, this is not a new thing, because we spoke, when you think about Liam Manning's Bristol City team, I think I'd have to pull up the stats and have a look, but they were a team who really tried to dominate territory and space. And to do that, you need to play a high line. You need to, and that means, but as a byproduct, you need pace and you need recovery running, which is why, you know, for all of his detractors, Jose Cordoba finds himself back in the team. And as Paddy said, structurally in the last two games, they've looked a lot better at doing that. So that again doesn't, I'm struggling to see how you can go down the Liam Manning route and end up with a centre back like Yakov Medic. That's not to say, like you, that he's not a talented player, because individually, I think there are some really good attributes there, and we've seen some of them as well, where Norwich have been defending deep, and his ability to read a game and to block and to tackle in those moments, kind of those fundamental ones. But actually, he's not the type of defender you can leave in a big space on the halfway line and expect to win any tussle. And that fundamentally then has to change the way that you play. And I guess just to play devil's advocate on your Liam Manning point, and I'm not saying I disagree with you, but just to pose a question, isn't the point that some would raise, actually he's nine games in and we've seen what, 3-4 different formations, and again maybe this all links back to recruitment, so feel free to do that, we've seen lots of changes every week, and that point that Paddy raised, maybe a lack of identity at this stage, and some of this isn't new, to be fair. You look historically, his Oxford's teams, his Bristol City team, even his MK Dons team, as good as they were in League One, obviously he inherited from Russell Martin, there were criticisms that they really struggled to break down low blocks and defences. So some of these criticisms aren't new towards Liam Manning, but isn't that the point that some people would raise, that in terms of actually an identity, a vision, something to buy into, we just haven't quite seen the team look in that way?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely fair. I would actually take it a step back to pre-season. I know that the pre-season was planned for Johannes and what have you, but I think pre-season was a disaster. There was nowhere near enough games. I think barely anybody played 90 minutes, maybe Vlad. There wasn't many others who actually played a full 90 minutes. How are you supposed to go into a championship season with that being the case? And I think that's why we haven't seen those things. He's having to chop and change. He clearly doesn't know his best 11. I think that's a given. He doesn't know the best formation because he had nothing to work with in pre-season. And I think we've started the season very, very slowly because of that. And yes, you want to see a spark. You want to see some excitement. You want to see real intent. And we haven't seen that. But I think that is partly to blame, that, you know, he didn't have a solid base to work from, where he'd played 6-7 friendlies against decent opposition. And he actually had a set formation and had his players in place. When you're signing 12 players, you know, a whole new team and more, it's going to be nigh on impossible to do that really quickly. And I just think we maybe, with him, I think we just need to maybe show a little bit of patience.
Yeah, I completely agree with what you said. And on pre-season, I mean, me and Paddy did those games in Holland, and particularly the first leg, which was
Connor. Yeah, I mean, that is a fantastic. We're just going to cut across you because I've got flashbacks. You remember the Olympiacos game? No, that's doubleheader, the second one. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was just a farce. I think there was.
Is that the one with VAR? I forget.
I can't remember, but all I know, it had a lot of noisy Olympiacos fans in the ground in this sort of, you know, backwater in this, I don't even know, can't remember what part of Holland we were in for that game, but absolutely bore no relation to anything that would be connected to Millwall on the opening day of the championship season in terms of personnel, in terms of what he must have learnt or not, as the case may be. A complete waste of time, effectively. And that was the only one you could say, the first of the double. I mean, who puts together double headers? It's quite right. I think, was it Rob there making that point? That was a Johannes Torup devised and designed pre-season. And I don't think we're breaching any confidences there that Liam Manning would not have done it that way. Far from it.
I think he made that quite clear, didn't he?
I think that's being diplomatic to say that he wasn't happy with the pre-season schedule. So, and why would he be? Because,
I tell you one thing I did find odd though, and Rob has mentioned this in terms of formations in pre-season. He started the league season with a three, and we only really saw that for the last game in Holland, wasn't it? Which was that 0-0 against
Warrington, was it?
Den Haag.
Oh, Den Haag.
Yeah. And then we saw it against Breda, and then suddenly we saw it in the championship season, having not seen it at all for any part of pre-season before that. That to me felt a little bit strange, if I'm honest, on a footballing point.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, as I say, you know, you forget how, choose my words advisedly, but how amateurish that felt, that whole pre-season sort of schedule, and he inherited that. And I always think, you know, that again, you know, there's elements that we could lay firmly at Liam Manning's door in this period now that are on him, and there are elements that aren't. And I think much like the fitness related side of it, not having key players available and the scale of muscular injuries. I think you do. And we all know, I mean, ad nauseum, head coaches up and down the land will always tell you pre-season is that block of time when you, outside of the relentless, certainly in the championship, game cycle and where it's just recover. Particularly now we're going to get into these 3-game cycle weeks where it's play the game, recover, play the game. The pre-season is where you have to put your base work in terms of the fitness, in terms of the developing that playing style, that identity. And I think it has, you have to look back now off the back of what they haven't done in these first 9 games. And it just does painfully illustrate that that was as an exercise, that was nowhere near what was required for a new head coach and 12 new players as well. I mean, it would have been challenging enough if it had been the same head coach and a reasonably settled squad and there'd only been 1 or 2 additions. But that scale of turnover, both in terms of head coach, coaching staff and new playing staff, then they've not had a suitable pre-season. It probably isn't a huge surprise. We're sat here now, 9 games in, they've got 8 points. And all those issues that we've talked about over the last sort of course of this hour about what is it Norwich under Liam Manning look like? What are they supposed to look like in and out of possession?
Yeah, there is a part of me that's really intrigued to see what that pre-season would have been like if Johannes stayed and exactly how it was supposed to be executed, because, yeah, it did feel like a bit strange. Rob, thank you. Again, we'll come back to you in a minute because I want to round off by kind of asking you guys about how you kind of see it going forward. But I want to bring Will in because, again, like so many of you guys tonight, he's been waiting patiently in the background. Will, yep. To come to you, what sort of do you want to bring up and raise, and what's your views on everything at the moment?
Yeah, I think just want to sort of discuss Napa really. I think like, mm-hmm. Broadly, I think the recruitment's been fine, but my major problem with him has been like sort of the sort of mixed messages and way the management's been sort of handled. I mean, going back to last summer, we sort of waited for Wagner to be sacked in the summer, and we got his guy in and gave him about 10 sort of under 23 players. And then suddenly it became the expectation to get the playoffs. Whereas I don't really think if that is the expectation, then you're sort of saying like, well, it's probably a bit raw for that. And like the sort of thing like Johannes was communicating throughout the year was that he thought it was going to take longer. But then it just came to a head and like with 2 games left in the season, it kind of just felt like we got sort of a bit impatient. And obviously I don't want to relitigate everything, but now sort of my expectation and people have got their views on whether the club needed a transition or not, but I was really happy to sort of, you know, build and develop last year. But now this season, like through the sort of actions and maybe like sort of the managerial sugar rush that Napa got or like the sort of departure from his vision, like my sort of expectations now is like this season it is like we have to get playoffs, because that's just sort of a reaction to everything Napa's sort of done this season. And yeah, it's just like, yeah, everything he sort of said has been like sounded like the right thing and broadly like sort of how I view football, but at the same time I think like he's not really sort of executing that and you know, he's not really has like the backbone to sort of stick to his guns and sort of see it through. Like obviously he's the data guy and we've heard that sort of ad nauseum, but obviously Thorup's numbers were sort of playoff, you know, sort of level, obviously weren't there in the league, but and now Manning's are sort of like bottom like 4 in the league and we're sort of just hoping it'll get better. Whereas for me, I think he's probably sort of seen enough in like sort of a short term. Obviously, it's only 9 games, but this is like a short-term season. We've got to be getting playoffs. Like, I think we've kind of seen enough, but they're sort of riding it out. So, I just don't really know, like, where his head's at with, like, sort of what the club should be doing, because he's sort of lurching between one and the other.
Yes, and I think the thing for me, and I recognise data turns a lot of people off, so Ken, feel free to jump in and disagree with me. But for all of the talk of what they weren't doing defensively last year, they then hired a coach who kind of had worse defensive numbers than them, really. I recognise they finished in the top 6, and there's all sorts of reasons for that. I think there is an argument that maybe they went a little bit and zoomed a little bit in too much to the data, but I recognise the trends. And I mean, on Napa specifically, I'll read you this quote. I mean, I put this in a piece I did yesterday because it's 2 years this week since he was appointed, and he was asked in November 2023 about what his style of play was, what he wanted to bring to Norwich. I'll read you that those quotes verbatim because I've got them in front of me. He said, generally speaking, I'm quite a purist when it comes to football. I think that's understandable when you see the experience that I've had over the last 10 or 15 years and some of the people that have probably influenced me along the way. That's what excites me as a fan. That's what I think is the best way to approach a game. I think it's important to acknowledge, regardless of playing style or philosophy, people may or may not like, it's important to have consistency and have a team that's identifiable. I want to make sure over time we can build something that people understand exactly what a Norwich team looks like. It's important that when people come here to watch us play, they'll understand what they're going to see, and they can expect to see some common themes and what represents a Norwich City team. Whether that's men's senior team, women's senior team, or any of our academy teams, that's something that will take time. But ultimately, for me, it's aggressive, proactive, and attacking football. And I think particularly on those last three words, aggressive, proactive and attacking, Will, it's, and again, for all of the reasons that we discussed, there is mitigation. It is only 9 games. Maybe in the next block of games, we will see this, but it's hard to suggest we've seen any of that with a Liam Manning team so far.
Yeah, exactly. And you see like a lot of sort of talk about like, we don't know what he's trying to do. I think it's quite clear what Manning wants to do. It's not really working. And it's like, yeah, he doesn't really like playing through the middle. We don't really have midfielders playing on sort of like the half turn and stuff. And obviously Thorpe was maybe a bit more extreme in that, whereas he'd like set the centre backs like really deep and sort of like get like really high pressure from the opposition. Whereas here, I'm not really sure what we're doing to like open up the centre of the pitch. And obviously the line down the centre is the quickest way to get to the opposition goal. So I'd like, that's a place like you really just like have to be using like in any sport and just, yeah, being as sort of aggressive as possible. And I'm just not really sure that, yeah, obviously Bristol City fans said sort of similar, that it's like a U shape and it's just
the horseshoe.
It's just way too sort of weighted to the flanks. Like I thought Stacey might have been out the door this summer and then they sort of extended him and built the team around him. So, and he's playing well to be fair, but it's just like, it's the role for him rather than, I guess, like what's best for the team going forward for me.
Yeah, it's quite David Wagner, isn't it? How they empty the middle at points and push the fullbacks quite up and try and hit them with big long diags. There's a lot of similarities that I've seen in there. I mean, look, guys, thank you all for coming on. I'm going to end by sort of going round you all and trying to get, I guess, sort of closing remarks or how you see this going. Chris, let's start with you first and foremost. Thank you again for coming on and giving us your views right at the start of the show. Just some closing remarks from you, really, and where you see this going and maybe how it gets better.
I think this next block of games are very crucial for, I don't know if it's crucial for Liam Manning, but he needs to get a win somewhere, because having the club decided to keep him on is all good from the club's point of view, but if say they lose to Bristol, that the toxic atmosphere is going to get worse, and that's not going to be very pleasant for him. They just need a win, don't they? Somehow, you know what I mean?
Yes, especially at Carrow. Chris, thank you very much for joining us, my friend. Really appreciate it.
Cheers, Connor. Thanks.
Cheers, mate. Tom, let's come to you because you're our second speaker. Some closing remarks from you as well, please.
Well, I think Bristol City is nearly like the perfect storm, really, in games. I'm wishing that we can, you know, somehow put on a really good performance, you know, play some good football, hopefully keep a clean sheet, see some style and, you know, some style and patterns of play, you know, and see what we're kind of trying to do. And then hopefully, you know, get some results going forward, get through to January, maybe bring in a midfield creator, a left midfielder even. That's what I'd like to think will happen, but I do fear that if we have another limp performance, like dare I say Wrexham or anything even like that, then, you know, that could be nearly curtains for Liam Manning, but I hope that isn't the case. So, yeah, I'm going to be positive and let's hope the first, point that I made comes true.
Good man. Let's hope so. It's going to be a busy week, isn't it? 3 game week to go straight back into. And that feels quite seismic already. Tom, thank you for coming on tonight. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks guys.
Thank you, mate. James, I think you were next, so we'll come to you as well for kind of your closing remarks and maybe what needs to happen from here for Norwich City to start progressing.
Yeah, it looks like Manning is going to keep his job for now. So, like, just want to see the team be more aggressive and, like, attack games more and also entertain us, because, like, a lot, I mean, even if you ignore the results, like, the football has been, like, very sort of joyless this season, you know? Like, there hasn't really been much entertainment for us, which at the end of the day, that is, like, what football is for fans. Like, you go there to have a good time, and the football has felt a bit sort of joyless and uninspiring. And I just want to see us, like, play with some positivity and confidence and believe that we can go and dominate teams and score goals, you know? Like, the whole, like, sort of pragmatic thing is great if you're getting results, but, like, at the moment, we look nowhere near it.
Yes, indeed. James, thank you for coming on, mate. Really, really appreciate it. Thank you, and some excellent points made. George, let's come to you for your closing remarks.
Well, I want to be positive. I was trying to be positive for Sunday, but I just don't think it will get any better at the moment unless Manning decides to change his way of football with the players we got. But I just can't see anything now. Hopefully the atmosphere doesn't get as worse as it did on Sunday. But the way he's going to keep playing, he won't change it. So I'm hoping for his sake and the players' sake he will. And hopefully we can win against Bristol, especially his former club. And hopefully on to better things, really.
Yeah, well, exactly that. It feels like by hook or by crook, they need, particularly at Carrow Road, just to get something over the line. And then maybe there it will, like you say, it can do a funny thing, can't it, to confidence and whatnot. George, thank you very much for coming on. Really appreciate your time and your thoughts today as well. I'm trying to think in what order we did this. I think it was Alex next, wasn't it? Alex, let's come to you for kind of your closing remarks. You gave a brilliant sort of view earlier on where things are at. How does it change? How does it get better from here?
I think it will probably be just more false dawns till the end of the season. We'll then probably get rid of Manning. Unfortunately, I don't think Manning will be given probably the right amount of time. We'll have, yeah, like I say, probably a lot of false dawns. Manning will go, we'll get another decent but uninspiring manager in who probably just sees us get just outside of the playoffs, and then major soul searching is required again for the third or fourth year in a row. And I think it's a cycle we're just going to keep going down for a while until we find the right person or we give faith and time to the right person.
Yeah, some great thoughts, Alex. Really, thank you for coming on and speaking to us tonight. Really,
thank you
really
for having
appreciate
me.
Really appreciate it. No worries, top man. Hopefully, we'll get you back on here in the future. It'd be great to see you back. So yeah, thanks for coming on. Rob, I think you're next. Are you the same as Alex, or are you feeling that this could turn and be a bit more positive?
Alex has just sucked all the last bit of positivity I had left. Come on, Alex. Cheer up a bit, my man. I think sometimes we try and overcomplicate football, but the bottom line is we need a result against Bristol City. Doesn't really matter how it comes. We need a result. Whether it goes in off someone's backside and we win 1-0 or we win 5-0. I think Manning needs to sort of pick a lane and stick to it. He needs to pick a formation that he thinks will get the best out of these players, and we need to see roughly the same side for the next two or three games, and maybe we can get something going. But if he doesn't win this Bristol game and we stink the place out, you do worry a bit for him. But I'm hopeful that we can put a performance in and pick up the points there, and that'll kickstart us on a run, hopefully.
You've been just final question for you, Rob. I mean, you've been quite, I don't want to say pro Manning, because that's not the right way to kind of couch this debate, but I think you've been probably more willing to give him time than maybe some other people have been. What is the point for you that that you would start to maybe question it or feel like they would have to do something? When would that kind of change in your head? Is there a set point in time, or would it solely depend on progress and context and all of that sort of various stuff?
I think probably a bit of everything. We do need to see more positive performances. There's no question about that. And you can't keep going on like this forever. But I think we have got a little block of games now where there's a possibility to pick up points. And I just hope that he can. I mean, I just kind of feel if we get rid of him now or in the near future, you know, where do you go? We've gone from the more experienced guys in Smith and Wagner. We ditched them. We've then gone to Napa sold us on this big vision of a young up and coming coach in Johannes and bailed on him after 5 minutes. We've now gone to a sort of tried and tested potentially championship manager. You know, where do you go next? I'm really not sure. So I think we just need to give him a bit of time, and hopefully given that time, we'll be able to pick things up a bit.
And you said about Alex, let's inject some positivity. Are they going to beat Bristol City, Rob?
Yes.
Good man. Good man. That's what we like to hear. Thank you, my friend. Thanks for coming on. Really appreciate your time this evening. Thank you, mate. And Will, the final closing remark really goes to you. So see us out on a high or not, depending on how you feel.
Yeah, I think it's we've got to see a marked turnaround in performances that can consistently get us wins in this league. Otherwise, yeah, it's only going to get worse, and we'll be seeing the corner flag. But yeah, I'm not sure there's much to go on other than hope. But I guess you've got to stay hopeful in football, don't you?
If hope's all we have, if they're the final straws, we shall clutch at them. Will, thank you. Thank you very much for joining us and coming on tonight. Really, really appreciate it. And hopefully we'll see you back here, on another one of these soon.
Thanks. Thanks,
not just Will, but in general, we're here, every Wednesday bringing you these. I mean, we didn't get to, Paddy, we ran out of time, unfortunately. I was hoping to speak a little bit about the Carrow Road redevelopment and that side of it. We could probably do a separate space in itself on that, but, maybe we'll revisit that next week, which is, I'm trying to think when the 15th is. That's next week, isn't it? When the forum is. So maybe that's another discussion we can have around that time. I think it's worth saying, as well, Pad, because again, I know our colleagues at Radio Norfolk have done similar. So just to kind of echo what's been said, really, we obviously have asked to speak to Ben Napper. That clearly, you know, for reasons I think that Rob Butler's already stated isn't going to happen at the moment. So that's where we are, on that. I mean, to an extent, Pad, I think you can understand it, because I'm not quite sure at this moment in time what he could say. I guess it's probably that accountability element that people want to see, and just see someone speaking that maybe isn't Liam Manning. You always feel sorry for head coaches in these situations, because they are put up in front of us guys, twice a week, sometimes more than that. And sometimes you just want to hear a different voice, but you can also understand maybe why that wouldn't be, the club's preferred choice at this moment in time, it's fair to say.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to, we certainly don't want to be sat here and speaking from a club prism on these things, but you can imagine internally how they've looked at it. And off the back of the Carrow Road, which isn't technically maybe on Ben Napper's watch, but he's going to, if he gets put up off the back of that PR debacle, then he's going to have to defend that, I'm sure. And that's the last thing he probably needs to be doing. And then for me, the other thing, if you're looking at it from a club perspective, they probably know if Ben Napper gets put up now, it'll be questions about his future, questions about Liam Manning's future, the dreaded vote of confidence and how that plays out. So, you know, at this moment in time, that isn't going to happen. But, you know, in very short order, we've got the AGM coming down the track. And, you know, whether he speaks before then, he will definitely be speaking around then, won't he? So, you know, he and they will hope. But by that stage, which is what, a month, 6 weeks down the track, that the world feels a brighter place.
Absolutely. Look, thank you everybody who came on, whether you came on and had your say or just sort of sat in the background and listened. That's totally fine as well. As we said earlier, we do these every Wednesday, or try to, where there isn't a game. 7 o'clock, it will be two of three, on here to speak to you guys and, take the state of the nation, which is basically what we've called these things, because we haven't got another name for them, Pad, really, have we? So if anyone's got any name suggestions, that would, we're still open to those. That would be fantastic. So yeah, there we go. And we will leave you to enjoy the rest of your Wednesday evening. Pinkin.com, of course, the place to go. Have all of the coverage analysis and next week as well, the build up to Bristol City, because it will come around pretty quickly. Liam Manning, we expect to do his press conference next Wednesday. So it'll all ramp up again pretty quickly. Which I don't know if that's a good thing or not, Pad, really. It probably felt like we could have all probably done with a break. But at the same time, I think if you're a player, you probably want a game pretty quickly after Sunday, don't you? So it's a difficult balance.
Well, player, fan, media, trust me, when it gets to Saturday 3 p.m, I will be climbing the walls. So even as bad as Norwich have been, no, the sooner the football starts again, the better.
Absolutely. Thank you, everyone. Really appreciate your time tonight. We will we'll see you in some setting live somewhere where you can speak to us again very soon. See you later.